This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 6th of January 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Now we have a new reader for this week. We welcome Heather Bryant.
Hello.
The other readers are Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. So we'll begin with all our regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. This is the number that can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. That's 01962 861229. As you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory box, the memory stick in your box, you can also load it onto your own device. And you can also, of course, access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News in the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. And the recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now we start with our usual headline stories. This week there are three headline stories rolled into one, and they all concern local hospitals. And I will start with the first of these. And the title of this is Hospitals Critical for Second Time. The trust which runs hospitals in Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke has declared another critical incident due to the high volume of patients needing urgent care. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust declared the incident on Friday, December the 30th, as it takes steps to ensure patient safety. The Trust has said it remains very busy and is responding to a high volume of patients needing urgent and emergency care. It is now calling on residents to help by supporting them to get their loved ones home as soon as the decision has been made that they are ready to be discharged. On Twitter, they posted, "Today, Friday 30th of December, we have declared a critical incident as we take steps to ensure patient safety. The Trust remains very busy and you can help support us by taking relatives or friends home from the hospital as soon as the decision has been made that they are ready to leave." This is the second critical incident to be declared this month. As previously reported, the Trust also declared an incident on Tuesday, December the 20th, when it took steps to ensure patient safety. The Trust said it was responding to a high volume of patients needing urgent and emergency care, as well as challenges discharging patients from hospital. Now, Heather, the second headline story is Bid to Save A&E Gathering Strength.
A petition to stop the closure of Winchester's Accident and Emergency Department is nearing its target. The petition has so far been signed by 10,984 people, with a goal of 15,000 signatures. The movement began in 2020 following the announcement that New Hampshire Hospital may be built near Basingstoke, sparking fears that the A&E unit at the Royal County Hampshire Hospital will be closed or be downgraded. The online campaign is titled Stop the Removal of Winchester Emergency Department or Build a New Hospital Here. The petition reads, "There is major concern from the residents of Winchester that the emergency department will be removed, with the added worry of the air ambulance service's lack of funding and the time it takes for an ambulance to arrive being so long, some residents reporting up to 8 hours. In addition, and contrast to Basingstoke, Winchester has many hundreds of thousands of tourists each year, 400,000 to the Christmas market alone, and a large number of students. This, combined, far exceeds Basingstoke's population, and therefore requires, at a minimum, that a 24/7 accident department should remain in Winchester and be invested in. The residents hereby petition to keep the 24/7 accident and emergency department in place at a bare minimum. As previously reported, the petition reached and exceeded its 8,000 signatures goal, with campaigners looking to gather the last 4,000 or so people to get behind the cause. Jill Jay commented on the petition, "Basingstoke may not appear to be far on a map, but anyone living locally knows that the M3 is often at a standstill during school holidays, weekends, good and bad weather, and sometimes for no obvious reason at all. This results in an unacceptably long journey time." Meanwhile, John B. expressed his belief that it is imperative the Royal stays as is. Robina C. added, "We need to keep our local hospitals, especially A&E and maternity. It would take much too long to travel to Basingstoke." The new Basingstoke Hospital would be part of a £3.7 billion government funding package. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, said last year that it is hoped the new hospital will be built by 2028. Currently, two locations have been shortlisted for the new hospital: the current site of Basingstoke Hospital and land off Junction 7 of the M3.
So thank you, Heather. And Richard, your headline story is "Hoped for new hospital by 2028 despite stalled consultations."
Yes. Hampshire has been promised a new hospital, but as the year came to an end, the project appeared to be no further forward than 12 months previously. It was announced in 2020 that Basingstoke would be given a new hospital as part of a £3.7 billion government funding package. The development would likely mean the downgrading of the A&E at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and loss of other services. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, said she hoped the hospital would be built by 2028. But despite Hampshire Together stating on its website that a formal public consultation on options was planned to take place in 2022, the project appears to have come to an abrupt halt, with no new developments announced this year and no consultation taking place. Initially, it said the formal public consultation would be held from January to March 2021. However, almost 2 years later, and the project appears to have made no further progress, with the Trust still undecided on the location. So far, two locations have been shortlisted: the current site of Basingstoke Hospital and land off Junction 7 at the M3. A statement from Hampshire Hospitals refers to a new hospital for Hampshire rather than Basingstoke. It said, "We are working closely with colleagues in the new hospital programme and wider Department of Health and Social Care, and have taken every opportunity to demonstrate to them the importance of a new hospital for Hampshire. We remain on course and ready to deliver as part of Phase 2, 2025 to 2030, of the national programme. As soon as we're given the green light, we'll take our proposals out for public consultation at the earliest opportunity. We remain on course to deliver a new hospital for Hampshire. The Hampshire Together programme initially aimed to consult in January 2021. However, following discussions with our national partners, we collectively took the decision to undertake further work based on learnings from the first NHS trusts in the new hospital programme to ensure that the options we put forward are the very best they can be. This work is ongoing and complex, but we can assure local people that we will take our proposals out for public consultation at the earliest opportunity."
Thank you, Richard. Now we have the first of our non-hospital related stories, a major plan revealed for land at college, read by Margaret, please.
Winchester College has launched a major plan for a development to accommodate girls, writes Andrew Napier. The college, the city's biggest private employer is seeking planning permission for two new boarding houses on tennis courts at Kingsgate Park off St Cross Road. A large chunk of Kingsgate Park would also be redeveloped for an all-weather hockey pitch with artificial grass. Two sections of wall on St Cross Road will be demolished to allow access to the boarding houses. A planning application was submitted to the City Council just before Christmas. The boarding houses are needed for the private school to accept girl boarders from 2024. Day girls were admitted in September. The two houses would accommodate 60 boarders each and 20 day pupils. The planning application also includes a warning of the possible felling of a mature oak tree in Kingsgate Park. The college says it will be planting many trees. The new development would be very close to the sports centre also being built by Kingsgate Park, which is due for completion this year. The application to develop Kingsgate Park could be controversial, but so far the City Council has received no objections. The college says public views of the new boarding houses designed by architect Stanton Williams will be limited. In a planning statement, the college says, "These proposals represent a major point in the history of the school with the introduction of sixth form girl boarders and day pupils. Other sites for two boarding houses on the college campus were considered and rejected, with the site at Kingsgate Park representing the least constrained site available to accommodate the floor space needed to meet the college's requirements. On the new artificial pitches, the college says they will be available to outside organisations. The opportunity to offer the facility to outside sports clubs and local schools will bring benefits to the local community and the college. The location of the new all-weather pitch north of the sports centre will enable use of the indoor changing facilities and off-road parking." The only public comment to the council planners is from Andy Crade, chairman of Winchester Hockey Club, who said, "Winchester City needs to have a proactive and growing sporting strategy that has the necessary vision for the future to ensure the city continues to be a desirable centre of excellence in every sense. Winchester Hockey Club strongly support the logic behind this application, which can only benefit many, many youngsters." The college says the development is vital to its long-term future. In order to be able to continue to contribute to the cultural, social, economic and environmental well-being of the city, the college needs to retain its position as a leading educational establishment that has adapted to meet the needs of pupils in the future. Without investment in new buildings and other facilities, the college's prestige and its ability to maintain its existing land and buildings to the current high standards is vulnerable. Antrim House, currently the school's medical centre on St Cross Road, under the plans, would become the home of the boarding house mistress. The medical centre would relocate to Kingsgate Street. Other locations were considered and discounted for the boarding houses, including the Art School and Science School on Kingsgate Road.
Thank you, Margaret. Now, my headline piece is headed "Horror at Raw Sewage Seen Gushing into River." Sewage that is currently flowing into the River Itchen is an environmental disaster, a local has said. A resident who lives in Alresford informed the Chronicle about the smelly leak, which he spotted on Saturday, December the 31st, at Branbridge near Otterbourne. And he said this is not the first time it's happened, claiming sewage can be seen leaking into the River Itchen every time it rains heavily. The Itchen rises to the south of New Alresford and flows 26 miles to meet Southampton Water below the Itchen Bridge. They said raw sewage is coming up through a manhole cover in the middle of the road outside Branbridge Garden Centre, and from there it is flowing straight down into the River Itchen. And this happens frequently. Whenever we have very heavy rain, it's not an irregular occurrence. It has been reported to the Environment Agency and they are in contact with Southern Water. He branded the leak as a disaster. He continued, "It is an environmental disaster to be honest, not least of all because the River Itchen is a chalk stream, and there are only 200 chalk streams or thereabouts in the world, of which 85% are in England, and quite a number of those are in Hampshire, with the Test and Itchen being the two most iconic ones. To see this happening to an iconic chalk stream, renowned for its crystal clear waters, is horrendous. On top of this, the residents have said that the leak stinks. A spokesperson for Southern Water said, "Following reports this week about flooding from a manhole in Branbridge, we took immediate action by carrying out checks at the site and at nearby Kiln Road pumping station. The issue was fixed as quickly as possible. We are aware of a longer-term problem at Branbridge, especially during heavy rain, which is why we're planning to deliver a new scheme to allow a greater volume of flows and reduce flooding and pollution events. We are very sorry for any inconvenience and upset caused." An Environment Agency spokesperson said, "We are aware that over the Christmas period there were a number of sewer outflow discharges at Branbridge, and our investigations into this matter continue. Our monitoring of the River Itchen is also ongoing to assess whether the watercourse was adversely impacted by these discharges. Members of the public are encouraged to report pollution incidents to us via our 24-hour free phone emergency hotline, which is 0800 807 060. 0800 807 060. And the last of our headline stories from Heather is headed, MP hits out at COVID stance.
Winchester MP Steve Brine has sounded warnings over Chinese visitors to the UK carrying a new variant of COVID. The government has been caught up in a controversy over whether or not China's travellers should be screened. Speaking on Times Radio, Mr. Brine, a former health minister, said, "Now, let's just say that lots and lots of Chinese nationals want to come and visit this country with a poor vaccine. They end up getting sick. And then the NHS has frankly got enough on its plate right now without any emergency admissions, which it would, of course, have to deal with." The MP added that it was likely that the government would change its position on the protocol. He said, "I'm surprised that the initial line that they put out was this. I don't think it's gone down well with many members of the public or constituents this morning. Given what's happened, I think we have every right to over, not under, react. So I suspect that there are robust conversations going on within government and the UK Health Security Agency as we speak. I would be surprised if the government line is the same at tea time as it is at lunchtime. Public confidence is such that we know the lesson of 2 years ago was that time is of the essence. The public are a bit bemused that we are in this place, seemingly not having learnt."
Thank you. Now we go on to the death notices. Baker, Enid Baker, peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 16th of December, aged 91.
Nicholson, Peter Roy Nicholson, passed away at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 18th of December, aged 72.
Ryder, Olive Mary Ryder, peacefully at St Cross Grange on the 21st of December, aged 98.
Russell, Rosemary Russell, on the 16th of December following a catastrophic stroke in May 2021, and finally pneumonia.
Selby, Geoffrey Selby, formerly of Highgate, Winchester, peacefully at Millway House Nursing Home, Andover, on the 20th of December, aged 70.
Wild, Kenneth Wild, peacefully at Fleming House Nursing Home on the 8th of December.
And now we have an obituary of Belinda, Lady Montague, which is read by Richard, please.
Her craftsmanship and creativity will live on. The Hampshire peer, who owns the Bewley estate, has penned an obituary for his mother, following her death at the age of 90. Lord Montague has also released a series of pictures from the family archive of Belinda, Lady Montague, a needlework expert who produced work for Queen Elizabeth II. The first wife of Edward Lord Montague, she helped him create the National Motor Museum. The Honourable Ralph Montague wrote that her creativity and craftsmanship will live on, especially at Bewley, where her work adds so much richness to the place. Lady Montague was born in 1932, daughter of the Honourable John de Bath de Crossley, who died from TB when she was just three. Her first home was at Stone Farm on her grandfather's estate at Cadland near Fawley, where she developed her lifelong love of riding. Belinda's schooling started in London, but at the outbreak of war, the school relocated to Wimborne. Belinda witnessed the gathering of the troops and landing craft at Leap Beach in the run-up to D-Day, and as well as the crash of a Junkers 188 near Exbury, which inspired Neville Shute's novel Requiem for a Wren. She showed considerable talent for drawing and painting from an early age and became a commercial artist after attending art school. In 1959, Belinda married Edward, Lord Montague of Bewley, and joined her husband in running the family home, Palace House, as a visitor attraction. In the week before her wedding, she was at his side for the opening of the Motor Museum. The renowned Bewley Jazz Festivals were in full swing at the time, and big band leader Vic Lewis dedicated a number to her called Lady Belinda. In 1961, she gave birth to Ralph, now the fourth Baron Montague of Bewley, and in 1964, Mary. Lady Belinda adored her animals, not least her Arab stallion Allah, which she rode on the open forest with the New Forest buckhounds. She also kept bantams, forest ponies, cattle, Jacob sheep, and was never without at least one pet in the house. Throughout the 1960s, Lady Belinda designed souvenirs for the Bewley and Bucklers Hard attractions. She was always up for new challenges, everything from water skiing to the river, on the river to driving a steam-powered lawnmower at a rally. Lady Belinda created the costumes for Bewley's medieval banquets and compiled and illustrated a book of old family recipes entitled To the Manor Born, which continues to be sold in the shop. Belinda's grandmother, Daisy Drummond, had been a highly respected dressmaker, and this may have influenced Belinda's decision in 1972 to enrol at Southampton College of Art to study embroidery. Having re-established herself back on the Cadland estate, she enjoyed a prolific period of designing and making embroidered textiles. Her first large work, telling the story of the New Forest, was commissioned to mark its ninth centenary and involved a team of 60 volunteers. The 28-foot-long embroidery, which took 2 years to complete, was viewed by Her Majesty the Queen and is on display in the New Forest Centre in Lyndhurst. In 1986, Lady Belinda made a cushion for Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth the Queen Mother when she visited Winchester Cathedral. By this time, Belinda had relocated to Longdown, where she bought a farmhouse with direct access to the forest. Belinda remained on good terms with her former husband, and in 1891, he commissioned her to produce a series of 7 embroidered wall hangings depicting the history of Bewley Abbey from its foundation in 1204 to its dissolution in 1538. In 1997, Belinda made a new altar frontal and kneelers for the family's private chapel at Bucklers Hard to coincide with the wedding of her daughter, Mary, to Rupert Scott. A royal commission followed in 1999 when the Queen asked her to make the kneelers for the wedding of Prince Edward to Sophie Rhys-Jones. Lady Belinda served as president of the New Forest Association from 1983 to 1995 and then as its patron until 2021. A keen gardener, she was also president of the Southampton Horticultural Society. Lady Belinda leaves her 2 children, 2 grandchildren, Benjamin and Amelia, and 2 New Forest ponies. An exhibition, The Art of Lady Belinda, can be seen in Palace House. There will be a private cremation, followed by a service of thanksgiving at a later date.
Thank you, Richard. We now have Christian comment read by Margaret, please.
And this week it has been written by Nigel Hemming, and he is the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. And it's headed, Making Every Season Beautiful. This year in our church we spent the Advent season praying, fasting and reflecting on the coming of Jesus in Bethlehem, in our lives today and at his future return. It was a real privilege to draw close to him in a season when so many are desperate for hope and answers. We have followed up the fasting with feasting for the 12 days of Christmas, not literally eating throughout, but deliberately taking almost 2 weeks to celebrate, reflect, and give thanks for all that Jesus' birth, his life, and his death and resurrection mean for us. We have read again of the power of the gospel and the salvation Christ offers to all who would follow him. It has been a precious time. On New Year's Day, we read from Ecclesiastes 3, where there is a well-known poem, A Time for Everything, which includes the line, A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, verse 4, and which is followed up by the brief but powerful declaration that God has made everything beautiful in its time. I imagine that for many 2022 has been a mixed year with seasons of both joy and challenge. Perhaps we look back fondly on precious times with special people, giving thanks for family and close friends. Maybe we've been cheered on our children or grandchildren as they have achieved memorable milestones on their journey. It's easy to see the beauty in those kinds of events. It is harder sometimes, though, to see how God could make seasons of illness, hardship, loss or tragedy somehow seem beautiful. There are the times we wish we didn't have to live through. It could be long-term sickness, chronic pain, mental health, challenges, relationship breakups, career difficulties, economic hardships, family struggles or loneliness. These darker times feel like seasons of enforced endurance, and yet God and does want to be present for us in those moments too. Even if we can't see it at the time, with hindsight we begin to realise the truth of Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Another version of this occurs in the well-known Footprints in the Sand poem. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. Whatever your experience had been in 2022, it is worth taking the time to look back to give thanks for the joyful times and to reflect on the more challenging seasons of this year. Why not look closely to see just what kind of beauty the God who makes all things new is in the process of creating out of those difficult times? And whether or not you can see it all yet, why not give thanks for that too? And that's from Nigel Hemming.
Thank you, Margaret. Now we move on to letters to the editor. I'm going to read the first letter. It is accompanied by a photograph, which is obviously a bit of a challenge for us, but it does actually show the edge of Sarum Road and a figure there which appears to be draped in either net curtaining or maybe polythene. Anyway, the letter which accompanies this is written by Chris Blackman. And it's headed, The Mystery of the Headless Woman. This poor grey lady has been sitting here with her legs crossed and her hands on her knees for quite some time. If she's waiting for a bus, someone should tell her that the stop is just around the corner on Romsey Road. Or perhaps she's on a hospital waiting list for a new head. Or is this Banksy's first venture into sculpture? That letter was written by Chris Blackman, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter from L.J. White is headed Heinz Memory. Mr. Hayter's piece in the Hampshire Chronicle, Life Enriched 60 Years Ago, December 29, brought back to me similar memories of 60 years ago. Just before the Beatles became globally famous, there was a local group who had a number one hit here, and I believe in America, which coincided with the first transatlantic live television transmission via satellite. The record was, of course, Telstar, inspired by the satellite's name, and recorded by the group The Tornadoes. One of its members was Heinz Burt, who lived just opposite me in Sparrow Square, and we frequently played on the green as schoolboys. I still have the vinyl record, but regrettably I never thought to get it autographed. It has been commemorated by Eastleigh Council. He has been commemorated by Eastleigh Council by naming a local road after him. And this is from L.J. White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
Hugh Sanderson writes about the NHS and statistics. Steve Bryan is undoubtedly right to say that the NHS has poor prospects as a sustainable service. But he's being misleading in saying that we spend the fifth largest amount in the OECD on healthcare. It's true that the UK has the fifth highest health expenditure as a proportion of GDP, and it sounds like a good record for a party that's been in power for 12 years. But the reality is that we're only 15th in terms of the actual amount of money spent per head, and that's the figure that counts in paying for staff, drugs, equipment, etc. We rank 13th in the OECD for nurses per person and 22nd in doctors per person and 12th in total healthcare and staff per person. International comparisons are always complicated and the truth from any set of statistics is difficult to determine, but there's no room for complacency that our health spending is near the top of the league. It's also worth noting that we spend less than half as much per head as the US healthcare system, idolised by many in the Conservative Party, which has poorer health outcomes and doesn't even manage universal coverage. Hugh Sanderson, Eastgate Street, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Robert Barnes, and it's headed "Quality Assured?" The resurrection of the 1980s term value engineering by Councillor Todd, reported in your editorial of December the 29th, will be of some concern for those of us who remember its lack of value then. An informal definition used by lecturers in an engineering faculty of the University of Birmingham about products so defined by their neighbours, the British Motor Company at Longbridge, was to ensure their cars got beyond the factory gate before they started to fall to pieces. The MOD used it for a short time before discarding it as unworkable. Value is defined as quality times delivery divided by price. What the City Council really needs to concentrate on for their major projects is the assurance of product and construction quality. For materials and processes in construction, this means including the international standard ISO 9000 as mandatory in all their specifications. This originated as Defence Standard 65-21 in 1969 because of very poor quality equipment being supplied to the armed forces by British industry. It was then taken to the British Standards Institution, becoming BS 5750, and later adopted as ISO 9000. To shore their own quality, Winchester City Council planning departments, planning and building control inspection departments, must be brought up to and accredited by the UK Accreditation Service, UCAS, to standard ISO 17020. General criteria for the operation of various types of inspection bodies. This came into being following the chemical industry's request to the Institute of Mechanical Engineers to independently assure adherence to the pressure systems regulations after the Flixburg disaster in 1974, followed by the Piper Alpha disaster in 1989. Both were found due in part to poor inspection of systems maintenance. Michael Heseltine, as Secretary of State, then required IMECE accreditation be incorporated into UCAS. I have worked extensively on quality inspections, and as an external examiner for IMECE and UCAS on the accreditation of inspection departments on North Sea oil platforms, and I firmly believe that they have been had they been fully applied to Grenfell Tower's refurbishment, that disaster would not have taken place. Having lived in Winchester for about 20 years until recently, I hope these suggestions will help WCC to achieve real value engineering for the city in its major projects. Robert Barnes, Chartered Engineer, Gunners Road, South Sea.
Thank you, Margaret. Yes, that was a complicated letter to read. I sympathise with you.
So true.
So true, yeah. Anyway, I'm reading the next letter, which is written by the Reverend Peter Hewis, and it's headed Family Silver. On reading of water supplies being cut in your area, I looked up the annual report of Southern Water. It seems they are owned by Greensands Holding, but through a rabbit warren of holding companies, and there is some involvement with the Australian Macquarie Asset Management. I'm old enough to remember when water companies were owned by us, the local ratepayers, until a Conservative government carried out asset stripping and sold water companies and land off. It was a Tory, Harold Macmillan, who regretted selling off what he called the family silver. So what has Romsey MP Caroline Noakes to say to your residents who lost their water supply about her Tory party selling off the water companies? This was written by the Reverend Peter Hewis of Little Blenheim, Yarnton, Oxford.
This letter is from Simon Lever, headed Bushfield Camp. Winchester has experienced a number of development plans which have been cancelled, some at great cost to residents. Seemingly, this is through lack of consultation with the public, landowners, development and construction companies, and finance aspects. The Bushfield Camp could be seen as an example. Having attended a consultation event at Badger Farm Community Centre, I certainly have relevant comments. Much graphic information was on display, and the individuals were most helpful in answering questions, especially those affecting the local community. The greatest concerns were orientated around the close proximity to Whiteshoot Ridge and other currently natural land. The beautiful avenue of trees is Army Camp area. The beautiful avenue of trees is actually alongside the former Army Camp area, where the former Mizzen Huts are still present. Potential projects involving commercial construction plus a number of plans are of concern. Traffic access in and out, if any plan, would be challenging. The plans presented did not, in my opinion, propose biodomes such as in Eden Project. Totally out of context, totally unreal, totally overbearing. I can only hope that the plans are not being sold to the public, but honestly engaged with the public, where issues are genuinely taken on board. Winchester has much valued green and natural areas, and we should never take this for granted. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Councillor John Tippett Cooper celebrates those he calls unsung heroes. The awful consequences of Putin's attack on Ukraine continue to reverberate around the world as the Ukrainian people inspire us with their resilience and courage. 1 month before the war started, Winchester City councillors unanimously voted to become a city of sanctuary for people seeking asylum and refugees. This commitment would be quickly and dramatically tested. Some cynical people blogged that Winchester wouldn't cope if the principle and reality of supporting people fleeing their home countries collided. Frankly, this couldn't be more wrong. Winchester District provided sanctuary in 2022 to over 400 Ukrainian people, one of the highest number in England for a district council. Winchester City Council had some experience of supporting refugees from Afghanistan and Syria, but not on this scale. There are huge challenges ahead in 2023, but Winchester Ukrainian community are a new and valuable part of our communities. Homes for Refugees schemes, like Homes for Ukraine, are not easy, and far more funding is needed, but the philosophy behind such schemes reflects far better values in response to refugee crises than the cruel, impractical thinking behind the Rwanda deportation plan. The scheme's success here is largely the result of many unsung heroes in our community. The County Council's officers, who already had unbelievable work volumes supporting Winchester's vulnerable and homeless, have stepped up in an utterly remarkable way, taking work beyond their capacity. Then there's local charities and a mix of entirely new and established community groups, especially City of Sanctuary, Winchester, run by incredibly dedicated volunteers. The individuals involved in these organisations have worked tirelessly to set up a network of community support services. And then there are the hosts, a group who've done so much. I spent this year on WhatsApp groups of Homes for Ukrainians, and I'm constantly stunned by the levels of commitment, kindness and support they show their guests. Passionately advocating for them in needlessly complex bureaucratic processes, supporting them through unimaginable trauma and giving homes to people they have never met. These are some of our unsung heroes of 2022, and Winchester should be proud of them. Councillor John Tippett Cooper, City of Sanctuary Champion, Winchester City Council.
Thank you, everyone. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. You can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Or you could even drop into their offices when you're next in Winchester Town Centre. Now we will go on to editorial comment, and this is read by Richard, please.
We shouldn't stand in the way of change. This issue of the Hampshire Chronicle, like all of them since 1772, reflects the ebb and flow of life. There are stories about births and deaths, about new plans and closures. It's sad to see pubs close, such as the Roebuck and the Willow Tree, but there should be optimism that once the economy picks up, both could reopen. Certainly the Willow Tree, with its fabulous garden, has a lot going for it. We also report on Winchester College's multi-million pound plan to accommodate girl pupils with two large boarding houses off St Cross Road. The plans are likely to be controversial, as much of Kingsgate Park will be affected, and there are many people in the city who are uncomfortable with any change. This is a huge move by the private school to jettison centuries of tradition and move fully into the modern world. These girls will need their privacy, and the college needs to find somewhere for them to stay. The college has been around for 600 years and cannot be criticised for its stewardship over the centuries, and one can see no reason to criticise it now.
Thank you, Richard. Now, I've got the opinion piece, which is headed Never Judge a Book, and it's written by Carly Duzzies. We lost at least two great women in 2022. The first was, of course, Her Late Majesty Queen Elizabeth. It's hard to fathom the effect that she has had on most of us who grew up entirely in the new Elizabethan age. In Turkey, for some autumn sun, I tried to explain to a restaurant owner, incredulous at how people were queued for hours to file past Her Majesty lying in state, I wouldn't line up for my own parents, so why did the Brits do it? I told him the key word lay in his question. Parents. For many of us, Queen Elizabeth was simply the mother of our nation. And why not? It's human nature to relate to true leaders in this way. Travelling in South Africa a year or two after Mandela's death, I was struck by how, across their rainbow nation, everyone I met was still affected by the loss of the man who, quite literally, gave his life to his country. It was the same for the Queen. She was always there, not just at 3 p.m. on Christmas Day, but throughout the year. A constitutional monarch has the right to be consulted, to encourage and to warn. No doubt in her 70-year reign she will have done so several times, but we shall never know. Such conversations between the monarch and the Prime Minister remain confidential, and rightly so. In my journalistic dotage, I have come to realise that modern concepts of transparency and full disclosure, though handily providing copy for the media, are not necessarily always in the best interests of good governance. Above all, as I never tire of telling doubters, the key benefit of a constitutional hereditary monarchy is that it stops someone else muscling in on the top job. Putin would have been gone long before his current 22-year reign, as would Xi in China. Well, now we have a new king, and even the monarchical doubters seem to agree that he's making a pretty good fist of it, setting his own style while maintaining continuity. And that is how it should be. We Brits prefer evolution to revolution. The second great woman to leave us this year was Hilary Mantel. As I attempted the first few pages of Wolf Hall, the first in her trilogy featuring Henry VIII's counsellor Thomas Cromwell, I struggled. Her writing style was unconventional and often confusing, but once you tuned in, you were hooked, and I eagerly awaited the sequels, Bring Up the Bodies and The Mirror and the Light. I was intrigued by this clever literary brain. And then I saw her on TV. What a funny looking woman, I thought. No Antonia Fraser, easily the most physically attractive of historical novelists of all time. And then I listened to the repeats on Radio 4 of Hilary Mantel's memoir, Giving Up the Ghost. It charted her early years of pain, misdiagnosed as female mania and wrongly treated with now banned psychotropic drugs by the male chauvinists that were all too prevalent in the medical profession in the 1970s. Being probably brighter than those in charge of her care, Hilary started to research her condition herself and decided that she was suffering from endometriosis. Eventually, agreeing with this informed steer, the medics gave her surgical menopause at the age of 27, but not before the various treatments, including steroids, have given her what she described as a curious moon face. Living as I do with facial paralysis, you would think I would know better than to make instant judgments about how someone looks. But I cannot help myself. It's human nature. Being civilised is about what we deal with such instant reactions. We should never judge a book by its cover, or indeed the first few pages. So, in 2023, I am going to try to put that right. I'll probably fail, but I will try. Now we move on to historical piece read by Margaret, please.
A blog devoted to history of county in the 1820s. To mark the launch of a new blog devoted to the history of Hampshire in the 1820s, St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde played host to a series of readings from the Hampshire Chronicle and other contemporary sources which illustrated the agricultural distress in the 1820s. A panel of readers, including Professor Christopher Mulvey, Nigel Bradshaw and Alice Blakeway, drew on stories of poverty and hardship to paint a picture of what life was like for ordinary people. Barry Sherlock, the well-known local historian and Hampshire Chronicle contributor, then provided the historical background. This included the Captain Swing riots towards the end of the decade and a maxi trial held in the Winchester Great Hall, which resulted in almost 140 men sentenced to transportation or imprisonment and 6 men sentenced to execution. Stories of smuggling and poaching, especially in the New Forest, also featured to illustrate the lengths to which some folk went to put food on their family's table. Edward Fennell, who has undertaken the research, said, "The new blog, called Rural Rides and Rural Riots, will chronicle events of 200 years ago, season by season, in real time, from Cobbett's rural harangue in Winchester's Black Swan Hotel in 1822, through to the death sentences passed in December 1830. It is a long journey, but it will give readers a chance to empathise with their forebears of 2 centuries ago and show how far we have come, but also how some problems of rural poverty are still very much with us. It is all a long way from the world depicted by Jane Austen, who died in 1817, still recovering from the after effects of the Napoleonic Wars and the depredations of field enclosures and new agricultural technology. The rural working class suffered a sharp fall in their standard of living during the 1820s. According to Botley resident and newspaper publisher William Cobbett, the proposed wage reductions would make the labourer a walking skeleton. Alongside the tales of hardship, the blog will also offer accounts of people able to delight in the joys of the Hampshire countryside. Edward said, despite the poverty, there was also a strong sense of England's green and pleasant fields. Rural Rides and Rural Riots will be published bi-monthly and will be available free of charge. To see the first edition, go to Agricultural Distress in the 1820s.uk.
Thank you, Margaret. Now we go on to Belgarum, which is probably, you know, is an alternative look at the news. And there's 2 items this week. Heather, could you read yours first, please?
This is a short item headed "It's Official, We're Nearly UK's Most Generous." An online card and gift business has analysed its customers to find out where people are most generous, and Hampshire nearly took the top spot. Funky Pigeon revealed Hampshire as the 2nd most generous county in the UK, based on the number of cards and gifts ordered in 2022. The greetings card business analysed the names and locations of its customers as part of its annual sealed report, looking into its users' habits over 2022. Pipping Hampshire to the post was Oxfordshire at number 1, with Aberdeenshire and Essex next most generous.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Well, now then, this is headed "No Nudes, We're Hampshire Cultural Trust." And it features a cartoon which has at its centre the famous Elizabeth Frink sculpture of horse and rider, which has been in the High Street for many years, famously nude. And we have 2 uniformed officers wearing morality police signs, and they've put shorts on the rider saying, "Now I've put those shorts on him, he's decent." And the other one says, "Yeah, but what about the horse?" A story that captured the headlines this year was Hampshire Cultural Trust's prudish order to Winchester Art Club that no nudes should be displayed in the annual exhibition at the Ark that ran from November the 17th to Tuesday, January the 3rd. The trust had argued that visitors to the City Space Gallery may be offended by naked flesh. Mike Ellis's splendid cartoon points out to the fact that one of the finest pieces of public art in Hampshire, Elizabeth Frink's Horse and Rider, features both human and animal nudity.
OK, so we now have a few items of interest in what's on in the Winchester area. Heather, please.
This is an item headed "Voyager to Share Stories." An explorer from Winchester will be hosting a talk about his travels in Patagonia in aid of Whitchurch Silk Mill. One of Britain's most experienced travellers, John Pilkington, was one of the first modern travellers to retrace almost all of the 4,000 miles long the Silk Road. John's friendship with the mill began in the 1980s as he took his first steps on this route. With him, he carried a piece of Whitchurch silk to present to a silk mill in China and brought back a Chinese silk cocoon. John is now a patron of Friends of Whitchurch Silk Mill, which helps to support the unique skill of traditional silk weaving in the UK. The mill, a working museum, is now one of only three silk mills in the UK and the only place where visitors can see silk woven. John, who lives in Winchester, will bring his talk, An Englishman in Patagonia, to the silk mill on January 26th, where he will discuss the time he spent three seasons exploring this southernmost part of South Africa, including Tierra del Fuego. John made a mini-series for BBC Radio 4, broadcast to tie in with the publication of his book, An Englishman in Patagonia. He'll explain Patagonia's latest battles with climate change and volcanic fallout. Tickets for the talk cost £15, including refreshments, and can be purchased from the mill's website or by calling 01256 892 065. That's 01256 892 065.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, your piece, please.
Yes, this is all about what's coming up at the Theatre Royal. Great start to the new year in store at the Theatre Royal. Great shows are coming to Winchester in 2023 as the Theatre Royal has announced its new year programme. The lineup featuring drama, dance, comedy, magic, music, circus acts, songs and more, the theatre promises to have something for everybody. I think what you really need to do is go to the website, which is theatreroyalwinchester, or one word, .co.uk, theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk, where you'll see the whole programme, and a live stream option is also available for certain shows, where we can watch them from the comfort of our own homes.
Thank you, Richard. And Margaret, please.
Oh, well, this is one of the programmes that's going to be on at the Theatre Royal, and it's Ballet's Classic Love Story. Ballet enthusiasts will delight in Beauty and the Beast, which takes the stage at Theatre Royal Winchester from Tuesday, January the 10th. One of the most enchanting love stories of all time, it tells of Belle, a beautiful and intelligent young woman who feels out of place in her provincial French village. When her father is imprisoned in a mysterious castle, Belle's attempt to rescue him leads to her capture by the Beast, a prince cursed to appear as a fearsome monster who may only become human again if he learns to love. With Belle's arrival, the couple's feelings grow deeper. Performed by internationally renowned ballet company Ballet Theatre UK, Beauty and the Beast is inspired by the original tale and was first performed in 2018 as part of the company's 10-year anniversary celebrations. It is set to a stunning classical score, features new choreography by artistic director Christopher Moore, as well as new sets and costumes created especially for this production. Ballet Theatre UK will return on April the 5th with their passionate portrayal of Romeo and Juliet. Beauty and the Beast will be at Theatre Royal Winchester from Tuesday, January the 10th to Wednesday, January the 11th. For more information or to book tickets, visit theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk.
Thank you, Margaret. And I've got a few sort of small items here. Thursday the 12th of January, My Fair Lady is at the Mayflower, running for 3 weeks. This is a critically acclaimed West End run. It's just come to an end and is now on tour. Friday the 13th, there is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs at Otterbourne Village Hall. That's from between the 13th and the 22nd of January. Saturday the 14th at the Theatre Royal, there's an evening with Dan Snow on Wednesday the 18th at Wanston Community Cafe, and they hold a coffee morning raising funds, and they have very kindly raised funds for the Talking Newspaper in the past. Friday the 20th, Winchester Ghost Tour, that starts at 8:30 at the Buttercross. Saturday the 21st, there's a family concert by the City of Southampton Orchestra, and that is on at Central Hall in St Mary's. I read that very badly. Central Hall, St Mary Street, Southampton. Gosh, that's complicated. Right, that's enough of that. Thank you. Right, well, finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. Now, the sun, if there is any, will rise at about 7:30 a.m. and set again around 5 p.m. So, the general news, the first article from Heather, please.
This article is headed Bad Times at Indian Restaurant. An iconic Hampshire restaurant where Prime Minister Rishi Sunak once worked has voluntarily entered liquidation. Cutie's Brasserie in Southampton, run by company Joy Tunbari Limited, went into administration this week. Owner Cutie Mia said that these were the hardest times they'd faced. Speaking to the Evening Standard, he said, "Rising prices have made it difficult for this place to break even. In 42 years, this is the hardest time I've gone through." The restaurant at the Grade 2 listed Royal Pier Gatehouse has won numerous awards.
Oh, right. Yes. Richard, please.
Nursing homes staff wages soar by 40%. A nursing home operator says the wages of its frontline staff will have risen 40% in 4 years after its latest inflation-busting pay rise. Hampshire-based Cornerstone Healthcare operates three specialist homes, including Kitnox House in Curdbridge near Bishop's Waltham. Its homes cater for people with challenging behaviours associated with complex neurological and mental health needs. The business, which has twice been named Complex Care Provider of the Year by Health Investors, has awarded an above-inflation pay rise for the fourth consecutive year. Cornerstone Chief Executive Joanne Van Seel said, "We're seeing how the current labour dispute between the NHS and their nurses is affecting people on all levels of society. As a care provider, we have a tremendous responsibility to our residents and their families. We cannot afford that those people responsible for their well-being are underpaid and living in poverty. Nurses and healthcare assistants are playing a pivotal role in the country's healthcare system, and it will be fatal for a business like ours to lose them." Cornerstone says the wages for frontline staff are in line with the best in the counties where it operates, as well as being more than independently set real living wage. Mr. Van Zyl added, "We're caring for very vulnerable people whose complex neurological and mental health diagnosis makes them difficult to place elsewhere. There are only a small number of beds available for our resident type, and it's important that our services are able to run at full capacity and well-staffed to support the bed-blocking crisis in the NHS and other care homes that struggle to provide the complex level of care that we do. Healthcare assistants will earn a minimum of £11.90 an hour, with a nurse's hourly rate starting at £23.25. Mr. Van Zyl said, "Of course, it's not always easy for a small company like us to be at the top of the log with staff remuneration all the time. But like all care providers, we're walking the tightrope. More than ever, we are fully aware that every penny counts as the cost of living difficulties show no signs of easing. As a responsible employer, we have no other option but to assist our staff where possible. Not everything is about salary increases, though. Something as little as a subsidised cooked meal over lunchtime or food vouchers could go a long way to assist employees. The staffing crisis in healthcare shall continue to deepen, and the unprecedented strike action our NHS colleagues were forced to take to receive a fair pay reward will happen again and again until government realise that the health and care sector needs urgent financial support. Our staff cannot function on passion for the job anymore.
Thank you, Richard. Margaret.
Our workshops give kids lifelong kitchen skills. A community interest company in Winchester has been offering community cooking classes to help people learn how to prepare food. Munch, which operates from Unit 12 in Winnall Valley Road, has provided more than 500 places at its workshops in 2022 alone, helping to teach children and vulnerable people how to cook from scratch in the kitchen. And I have to tell you, this is where your talking newspaper is being recorded from 12 Winnall Valley Road.
Correct.
And the volunteers often take advantage of Munch's coffee and his food.
Yes. And the food is delicious.
And the food is very good.
It is, yes.
So we recommend it. And anybody can come in and use the facilities there. Anyway, to continue. Founder Denzel Carlton, who started the business in 2021 with his wife, nutritionist Mary Needham, said, "It's great as the whole family makes food together. So for the little kids, once they are getting their hands dirty, which is always important, and instead of just seeing food go into a basket in the shop and then going on a plate, they are seeing the process involved. With teenagers, obviously, they are older, so we can give them more in-depth recipes. And if we can teach a teenager to have one tent pole recipe, if they've got one thing they can make well, and they can make it to the kitchen to kitchen standard, that will mean they are more comfortable in the kitchen. They will be more inclined to make food themselves long-term than getting it from the shops."
Thank you, Margaret. My piece is headed "Aldi Donate Thousands of Meals to Households." A supermarket chain has supported charities, food banks and community groups in Hampshire by donating more than 9,000 meals to those in need. Aldi donated 9,300 meals to various good causes across the county over the festive period. Working with Neighbourly, the supermarket paired up its stores with local charity partners in the area to collect unsold fresh and chilled food when stores closed early on December the 24th, with stores to repeat the initiative on December the 31st. To further support communities this year, Aldi's Emergency Winter Food Bank Fund saw the supermarket commit to donating £250,000 to charitable organisations throughout the winter season. Both the festive food donations and the fund are part of Aldi's successful partnership with Neighbourly, a community giving platform which links businesses to charitable organisations. Corporate Responsibility Director for Aldi UK, Liz Fox, said, "We are incredibly proud to have supported so many amazing charities and community groups in Hampshire this Christmas, helping them to provide warm and healthy festive meals to those in need." Steve Butterworth from Neighbourly added, "Christmas is always a busy time for charities and food banks, but this year was without doubt one of the busiest. The donations from Aldi are vital for so many people, and we are really pleased to be working together to help those in need again this year." Now, Heather, please, next item.
This article is headed "Last Orders as Closed Pub Sells Alcohol Stock." A Winchester pub has been selling off its alcohol stocks as its tenants look to launch new careers. The Willow Tree on Derngate Terrace shut recently, a victim of soaring energy bills and the cost of living crisis. Former landlord Connor Godwin has been at the pub selling off the last stock with discounts of up to two-thirds. Most of the spirits have gone, but there is a table full of mainly whites and rosé that are available. Normally they would sell in the pub for £16 to £30, but most are going for less than £10. Connor said, "It's sad to close, but we had no choice. We were really struggling the last couple of months and we just didn't see the point in carrying on. The industry is dead. I don't see any pubs lasting apart from the big chains. Connor and his husband Alex took over the pub in autumn 2021 and have seen their energy bills rocket to up to £60,000 a year. When they started, they inherited debts of £40,000 and had reduced them to £10,000 before the impact of the cost of living crisis and rising costs. We brought the debts down, but we didn't have the remaining debt. The rise in energy may not have affected us too badly, but now with the cost of living, people cannot afford to go out. Connor and Alex, both 26, are moving to Southsea, with Connor working in a school and Alex to become an apprentice nursery nurse. Proceeds from the sale will help go towards the deposit on a flat. Connor posted on social media, "All must go, accepting cash payments, can't give change, or bank transfers, all going cheap." The owners of the pub, Green King, are looking for new tenants.
Richard.
Well, in a similar vein. Bar in unpaid wages row now announced closure. A pub in Winchester has closed down after former staff members took action after not being paid. The announcement was made on the Roebuck Inn's website, with staff thanking everyone who supported the pub during the COVID pandemic. An increase in running costs associated with the ongoing cost of living costs is also thought to be behind the decision. The statement says, due to the significant drop in trade and increase in running costs associated with the cost of living crisis, the business has unfortunately had to cease trading. Trade was considerably lower than expectations in the last third of the year, and the forecast for 2023 is very poor, which makes the business unviable in its current form. We'd like to thank all our staff and customers who've supported us. We wish you a happy 2023. As previously reported, some former employers of the Roebuck Inn in Full Flood say they are owed as much as £2,000. But the pub, run by company Vertman Limited, said it was working towards getting all past and present employees and suppliers paid by Christmas. And the proprietor Chris Airy said they'd been hit hard by rising energy prices and bills and a lack of custom. Many former staff members have turned to the Advisory Conciliation and Arbitration Service or taken legal action. One of the first was Emily Hamill Loader, who helped manager Mark Bowen and his wife Helen take over the pub in October 2019. Miss Hamill Loader, 25, has since successfully won an employment tribunal for which the business was ordered to pay £2,692 to Emily and her colleague Oliver Henshaw. The sum remains unpaid since the judgment on February 4th, 2022. She said, "When you're owed that amount of money, you can't leave. You're in too deep." The 22-year-old said problems with payment started last February. By Christmas that year, Emily said she was not paid enough money to get through December.
Thank you, Richard. Margaret.
Man caught with millions of smuggled cigarettes. A man has avoided jail after being caught in Hampshire with more than 6 million cigarettes that were smuggled into the country. Maxim Korotkov was found at Pitt Down Farm near Winchester by police who were on duty in the area. Southampton Crown Court was told how the 34-year-old of Botley Road, Southampton, was seen with another man unloading large white boxes from a vehicle. Prosecuting Michael Mason said one of the men was there to buy cigarettes. But when police stopped and arrested the pair, they found the boxes to be full of cigarettes that hadn't had the duty paid on them. A further search was conducted with police discovering keys, and when police entered one of the barns, they discovered 20 pallets of boxes containing millions of cigarettes. In total, 6,139,000 cigarettes were seized, including Business Royals and Super Kings, with a value to the supplier of £521,817. DNA on the boxes linked them to Korotkov. The defendant told the police he was a courier and said he did not know what had been inside the boxes. Korotkov pleaded guilty to 2 counts of fraud. Judge Nicholas Rowland said the defendant has personal mitigation and is otherwise hard-working. The 34-year-old was given a 2-year sentence suspended for 18 months. He was also ordered to carry out 260 hours of unpaid work and pay prosecution costs of £1,800 in the next 3 months.
Thank you, Margaret. My piece is headed Public, Put on Post-Christmas Fatberg Alert. Nice. Southern Water are urging Hampshire residents to keep pipes clear by giving drains a low-fat diet. The water supply company is asking that residents take care when disposing of items down drains and pipes so that large fatbergs do not form and block sewers, as blockages caused by fat, grease and other unflushable items find their way into the pipes. The company reported that there have been 26,932 sewer blockages in Hampshire over the last 5 years, with Christmas lights, footballs, T-shirts and cutlery just some of the items that have been discovered in the sewers. The most high profile was on Winchester High Street, which saw the raw sewage spill out because of a blockage. Head of Southern Water's Waste Water Network, Alex Saunders, said, "This is the time of year when we see an increase in blockages, and so many of these can be easily avoided. A blocked sewer can cause flooding to homes and businesses, and unclogging them can take a lot of time, effort and disruption for local communities. Fat, oil and grease should never go down the drain. Instead, it should be gathered in containers, allowed to cool, and then put in the bin." Heather, the next item, please.
This item is headed Horse Lands in the Local. A pub landlord couple have spoken of their anger after a horse was brought into the premises one evening. The unexpected guest arrived at the Brickmakers in Swanmore on December the 29th, much to the disdain of landlords Corran and Gareth Blake. Staff also spoke of children wrecking the place, despite them not being permitted in the pub after 7 p.m. In a post on social media, the owners said bringing the horse into the establishment was not acceptable. They continued, "Just to reiterate, we do not allow any animals or livestock in our pub. Apart from the complete ridiculousness of it and the poor horse's welfare, it is a health and safety issue. Nor do we allow children in our bar after 7 p.m. If people do not adhere to the rules, they will be barred. We do not want to be a pub where children are allowed to run round, wrecking the place whilst their parents get drunk. From now on, if customers do not follow our rules, they will not be served." The post was concluded by calling for more police presence in the village. The Brickmakers declined to make any further comment.
Thank you, Heather. Richard?
Well, booze seems to be the theme of the day, really.
Yes.
Plans to transform music shop into trendy wine bar. Perhaps they could buy some of that cheap stock that's going up the road. A former guitar shop in Winchester could be turned into a wine bar, according to new plans. Hayward Guitars in Stockbridge Road closed in May, after 22 years in business. Owner Brian Hayward said the closure was down to an increase in online shopping and COVID lockdowns. A plan has now been submitted to Winchester by Robert Price to convert it into a micro craft ale and wine bar. It says it would be a quiet bar, restricted to over 18s only. On the planning statement, it said there will be no music, live or otherwise. Entertainment focuses solely on conversation with other patrons. A bar would be located within the premises from which beverages would be served. Additionally, the applicant plans to serve food. The premises' primary use is proposed as a creative, community-orientated hospitality venue. Its operational hours would take place between 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. Last orders at the bar would be 9:40 p.m. and the site would be cleared by 10:30, with a gradual dispersal of patrons. The premises licence application will seek to obtain permission for licensable activities from midday to 11 p.m, 7 days a week. The plan will retain much of the current shop frontage, but will carry out some essential repairs. The proposed changes would not involve any major physical changes to the exterior appearance of the site. However, parts of the existing building are in a poor state of repair, and the applicants plan to undertake essential repairs to the timber pilasters and window architrave on the frontage of the building to enhance the appearance of the area. The rear of the property is proposed to reinstate the door to the rear of the building to provide access for installation of the cellar cooling equipment and maintenance. There's no proposed increase in the floor area or changes to the scale of the property. No public comments in support of the scheme have been received. If you want to look at the plans, you can do it on Winchester City Council's planning portal. But you have to search... Are you ready for this?
No.
22/02574/LDP. I can say that again. 22/02574/LDP.
Thank you, Richard. Beautifully read. Margaret, please.
Sorry. I'll tell you in a minute. Ambulance waits. Responding to news of an elderly lady who was left waiting for an ambulance for 7 hours, Danny Chambers has highlighted the NHS as a priority. The Liberal Democrat MP candidate for Winchester has said that the NHS and its patients are being let down by the Conservative government. MP for Twickenham, Munira Wilson, told Parliament that a 96-year-old woman in Winchester slipped and fell and was left in pain on the floor. The MP said, thankfully, a neighbour heard and called the ambulance, but that took 7 hours to arrive. When they arrived at the hospital, it was still another 6 hours to wait to see a doctor. It is only right that a minister visits the local ambulance station to find out what extra resources heroic paramedics need. Responding to the comments during the parliamentary debate on Tuesday, December the 20th, Mr. Chambers said, "Sadly, I hear stories like this all too often. It's heartbreaking. Hard-working NHS staff, patients and families are being let down by this Conservative government and deserve so much better. The NHS is my number one priority. As our next MP, I will work day and night to make sure people can get help when they need it. We can't allow people to keep suffering like this." A GP recently told the Chronicle that there is a serious shortage of antibiotics, such as penicillin V, being used to treat cases of strep A and amoxicillin. The Lib Dem MP added, "Parents are worried sick."
Margaret, my piece is headed "Couple Thrilled by Baby Joy." An Oxford couple have been left feeling overjoyed after their baby boy was safely born on Christmas Day. Walter Unsworth and her husband Sam from Medstead gave birth to their first child, a boy named Arlo, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Walter went through an induced birth due to concerns over her blood pressure in the last month of her pregnancy. She said, "I was being closely monitored by the hospital for my blood pressure, so in case I might have to had a pre-transferred knot, I had to be induced at 40 weeks, which, obviously, 40 weeks fell on Christmas Day. So we had a Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve, tried to make the Christmas weekend as relaxed and as chill as possible. And then on Christmas Day, my appointment was in the afternoon, we drove to the hospital." Walter said that everyone was really nice, with the midwives even going so far as to give Arlo a little snowman hat to wear. And there is a picture of baby Arlo with this snowman hat. "Well, everyone was really cheery, happy," she said. "They tried to make the day good. They brought some Christmas spirit, which was really nice." Walter was able to deliver Arlo safely, with the two of them staying in the hospital and being monitored until they were allowed to go home on Tuesday, December the 27th. He weighed 6 pounds and 15 ounces. The couple were both thrilled that Arlo was born safely, with Walter saying, "My husband was really excited. I was a bit apprehensive I was really excited to have him before Christmas, but I think it feels like it was meant to be, and I can't wish for anything else. Everyone wanted him to be born on Christmas Day, so everyone's wishes have been realised. Now, Heather, please.
Our former councillor was a lover of all things steam, is the title. A long-serving Winchester City and Hampshire County councillor has died, aged 81. Peter Kent Mason passed away after a long stay in hospital. The funeral service for the father of two took place on December the 22nd at the Wessex Vale Crematorium. His death notice described him as former Winchester City Councillor and Hampshire County Councillor and fireman on the Tullyclyn Railway and lover of all things steam. Mr. Kent Mason of Hack Drive, Coldon Common, was elected as a Liberal Democrat County Councillor for Bishops Waltham in 2001 until retiring in 2013. He had three spells on the City Council from 1994 to 98, 1999 to 2003, and 2008 to 2016, representing Coldon Common and Twyford and retiring at 75. On the County Council, he served on the Recreation and Heritage Policy Review Committee from 2001 to 2007, the Culture and Communities Select Committee from 2007 to 2009 until his retirement in 2013, on the Culture, Communities and Rural Affairs Select Committee. From 2007 to 2010, he served on the Hampshire Action Team for East Hampshire, Winchester and Havant. Councillor Mason served for more than 11 years as member of Hampshire's Police Authority, during which time he was chairman of its Crime Prevention Panel and Community Engagement Committee. In 2012, on the formation of the Hampshire Police and Crime Panel, he became a co-opted local authority member, participating in the first confirmation hearing of the new Chief Constable. From 2001, he was County Council's representative on the Twyford Waterworks, Trust until 2013. He was a member of the Freemasons Grand Charity. His lifelong interest in transport and steam prompted his early appointment to the Central Hampshire Rural Transportation Strategy Panel in Winchester.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Back to booze.
Back to booze, hurrah!
Pubs are pulling 99 pence pints for New Year cheer, apparently. The Christmas celebrations might be drawing to a close, but what better way to beat the January blues than a cheap pint down the pub? This month, the Winchester Pub, the old jailhouse in Jury Street, will be launching their January sales, which could see pints cost as little as 99 pence. Managers at Wetherspoons Pubs are reducing the price of a range of drinks and meals from Tuesday, January the 3rd until Tuesday, January the 17th, so there's still time. The price cuts also include its pubs in Southampton and Eastleigh. The Giddy Bridge manager, Alan Shorthouse, said, "Department stores and shops hold their sales in January, so it's the perfect time to have a sale in the pub too."
Thank you, Richard.
Stolen Marks and Spencer's goods found in boot of crashed car. Police have discovered a boot full of stolen toiletries and cosmetics following a crash in Southampton. An investigation has been launched following the crash on Brown Hall Way, writes Emily Liddell. Police searched the blue Ford Focus and found items that they believe may have been stolen from Boots and Marks and Spencers across Southampton, Eastleigh and Winchester. The items include electric razors, electric toothbrushes, hair straighteners, cosmetic gift sets, makeup sets, along with various items of clothing, including jumpers and other such items. A spokesman from Hampshire Police said, "We have conducted a number of inquiries and are now asking anyone who may have connections with those stores in Southampton, Eastleigh or Winchester and have noticed that they have significant amounts of stock missing to please contact us by calling 101, quoting crime reference 44220507990.
Margaret, now the last item is headed "Plea After Dad Loses All in Fire." A mother from Winchester has put together a fundraiser for her dad after he lost all of his possessions in a fire in Canada. Mum of three, Debbie Maycock, started the fundraiser after her father, Rod Maycock, lost his possessions as well as the trailer he was living in after it caught fire at a trailer park near Vancouver on December the 20th. Rod, who was asleep when the fire broke out, was only saved because he was woken by his dogs. The cause of the fire is still unknown. Debbie explained it was only due to these dogs jumping on him and barking and raising the alarm that he actually woke up. His bedroom was situated at the back of the trailer, meaning there was a dividing door to the living area, so he had to pass through the living area to get out. When he opened the door, it was all ablaze, so he grabbed his dogs and he ran through the fire and he got out. But for some reason, one of his dogs went back in and died. So that was another blow. It was about minus 14 degrees, deep snow, and he ran out, and all he had on him was his pyjamas, and the place burnt down within 10 minutes. His vehicles were all burnt, his truck and car, his shed, his lean-to, gone, everything. His whole life just went up in flames. Debbie set up a fundraising page to raise enough money to buy Rod a new trailer, as he's currently living with a neighbour. However, Debbie is still worried about her father, saying, "He's 78. He's riddled with arthritis. He can barely walk. His lungs are messed up from the fire, and they were already not great." She continued, "I'm devastated. This is the only way I can help. I can't get out there right now. I've got three children. I can't afford a flight for four people at the moment after Christmas." At the time of writing, the fundraiser has raised £1,510 towards buying a new trailer for Rod to live in, against a target of £10,000. Debbie wanted to thank those who have already donated, saying, "It's really touched my dad because he doesn't know a lot of them. But there are people that have donated who knew my dad and how kind he was in the past to them, so they've donated more. But I'm grateful to them. It's kind. The phone calls I've had from people, the well wishes, it's been really lovely." Well, that brings us to the end of this recording for this week. Another reminder that if you've got any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And could you please put the memory stick in your wallet when you've finished and return it to us as soon as possible. Now, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course our editors, and many thanks to our readers today. Heather, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Richard,
bye.
Margaret,
goodbye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye.